This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Barbara Leeming has written a new biography of Katharine Hepburn, one of Hollywood's most private public figures. New York Times film critic Janet Maslin calls the book more gripping than anything the star has played on screen. Leeming is also the author of biographies of Orson Welles, Rita Hayworth, and Bette Davis, and is a former film professor at Hunter College in New York. In her biography of Hepburn, Leeming examines the family history that shaped the great actress. Hepburn's grandmother was a great believer in education for women. Hepburn's mother was a suffragist and birth control rights activist. Katharine Hepburn's brother committed suicide when he was 15. The biography starts with the mystery surrounding the suicide of Katharine Hepburn's grandfather in 1892.
What you find when you examine that suicide is that it's a suicide which involves a younger sister, a devoted younger sister. And the questions that Kate's grandfather left his sister with, was it somehow my fault? Was there some way that I could have prevented my brother doing this? Why did he involve me in his suicide? He could have killed himself in any number of other ways. Why did he choose somehow or other to implicate me in it? Was that somehow a gesture of anger against me? Those questions, even though Kate did not know that they had been asked, were eerily repeated years and years and years later in 1921, when Kate, at the age of 13, walked into an attic in Greenwich Village and discovered her 15-year-old brother hanging by the neck.
Did Katharine Hepburn talk with you about the impact of her brother's suicide and the impact of discovering his body?
No. What Kate does with her brother's suicide is a fascinating thing, and she talks about this also in her autobiography. Kate's take on her brother's suicide has always been that it may have been an accident, it may have been suicide. What fascinated me when I went back and looked at the police reports, looked at the autopsy reports, and went back to her early statements to the police, was that, first of all, there's no question, and never was any question, that the brother did commit suicide. He comes from a family in which there are five other suicides, so it's not terribly surprising. However, her father's reaction to the suicide was, obviously, as any parent would be, he was devastated. This was his oldest son. As somebody said, it was like the prince of the family. And he could not bear the thought that his son had killed himself. And so the minute that her father was brought on the scene, he began to try and find ways to see it as an accident, to deny the suicide. And that happens with parents all the time. 2 days after the suicide, Kate and her father had a very traumatic telephone conversation in which this 13-year-old girl clearly realized that it was important, it was impossible for her father to admit what had happened. Before this, no one had been questioning it. The little girl knew clearly what had happened. By the time she got off the phone with her father, Kate had decided something. And it's, to me, the moment when she really becomes that courageous Katharine Hepburn figure that we all know. She had decided that it was more important to protect her father than it was for her to be able to deal with what horror she had seen in that attic bedroom. And so from then on, she went along with her father's story, which is the story that we've all heard and that was in the papers and so forth afterwards. And that is that the boy had killed himself accidentally playing a childish prank, trying to hang himself.
In Hollywood, Katharine Hepburn almost symbolized a certain streak of independence, of an independent woman. Her image
in
movies.
Yes.
Her mother was a suffragist and birth control activist. What were her mother's greatest accomplishments? How important a player was she in the movement?
Her mother was a major tactician of the National Women's Party. She was the president of the Connecticut Women's Suffrage Association before that. And she was one of the most radical of the suffragists. I had not been aware of the kind of violence that was done to the women, how hard it was for the women to get the vote. And what I realized in telling her mother's story was how much being brought up in what I came to think of as the war room of the Connecticut women's suffrage thing and of the National Women's Party meetings as well, what that had done to the little girl, Kathy Houghton. One of the things actually I asked Kate about, I remember reading letters from her mother and to her mother from other suffragists, and they're discussing what was called force feeding, when the suffragists would go on hunger strikes and they would be force fed in prison. Tubes would be stuck down their throats and the women would vomit and blood would come out of their noses, and the letters were horrific. And I knew that little Kathy Hepburn had been sitting at the table hearing this. And I said to Kate, when I interviewed her, I said, "Weren't you terrified by this?" And she looked at me and those blue eyes just lit up and she said, "No, I thought it was exciting." And of course she did. You know, what growing up in that did was to give her a taste for danger, a taste for life lived on the edge, and also a kind of fearlessness that reminds me sometimes of children who lived through the war and who speak later about the intensity of that kind of experience. It was a crucial experience for Kate.
Was Katharine Hepburn's mother's activism ever held against Katharine Hepburn during her acting career?
Yes, it was. And it was one of the things that her mother worried about a great deal. In fact, at the time that Kate really became absolutely a gigantic star with the success of Little Women, the original Little Women, and when Kate played Jo, I mean, everybody fell in love with her. But it coincided with the moment that Mrs. Hepburn and Margaret Sanger were being attacked for the birth control activism. And there was an enormous amount of fear that Kate would lose her audience and that the studio would go mad. And I found a wonderful letter from Kate to Sanger, who had written to her and said, "You know, your mother is really upset and we don't want to do anything that's going to cause you problems." And Kate wrote back to Sanger and said, "Don't worry about me. I can take whatever they dish out. What you and mother are doing is what is important." Well, I mean, you have to really like Hepburn for that, because it did count. And it was held against her, but she just went ahead.
Barbara Leeming is my guest. She's the author of a new biography of Katharine Hepburn. Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Barbara Leeming. She's written a new biography of Katharine Hepburn. You write a lot about Katharine Hepburn's private life, which is something that I don't think Katharine Hepburn was ever anxious to disclose herself. And you say that she was drawn to a quality in men that you describe as an oversensitivity to life.
She describes it that way, actually. Repeatedly, when she's talking, particularly when she's talking about John Ford and Spencer Tracy, who were the two major relationships of her adult life, both of them were tremendously self-destructive men. They were men who were extremely complicated and very hard on themselves. Both of them were alcoholics. Both of them were tormented. Ford, I think, is a much more sympathetic figure in so many ways, just because he had much less difficulty dealing. He loved Kate's intelligence. He loved her feistiness. He loved her independence, whereas Tracy, I think, ultimately was quite threatened by it. But I think that what Kate was drawn to in both men was the sense that they needed her. And like her mother and her grandmother before her, she was someone who saw herself as stronger than the men who seemed on the surface to dominate her. She was dedicated, I think, to making Ford happy, trying to make him happy, and then later to literally saving Tracy's life. She clearly saw these men later on as somehow similar to her brother's immense talent and sensitivity. And she seems to have been determined that what had happened to her brother Tom was never going to happen to these men that she loved. And she was never going to open another door, as she repeatedly puts it in her own autobiography, and find one of the people that she loved dead behind that door. And of course, the great tragedy was that she literally opened a door and found Spencer Tracy dead at a certain point. It's a horrific, horrific way to go through life, fearing that.
Well, it's a paradox that the two men she loved most, who really needed her, director John Ford and actor Spencer Tracy, were two married men who, in a way, didn't have room in their life for her, not for a marriage relationship anyway.
Yes, it was a very sad thing. I don't think certainly there was no evidence that she deliberately looked for married men. I think it was the wounded quality, it was the self-destructive quality that attracted her. I think they happened to be married. But I think that was a great cost to Kate, because it was obvious that she wanted to marry both of them. I mean, she's always said, oh, it didn't matter to her that Spencer Tracy didn't ever marry her. Well, obviously it did matter to her. That's very clear in letters and in testimony. And she clearly wanted to have children. So, and she had so much to give. But it was... The relationship with Tracy especially is so at odds with the public image of that relationship, and yet the myth of that relationship has such a hold on all of us because we think we know about it because we've seen it in the movies, but movies are obviously not real life. Yet, if you've lived for years and years and years watching Tracy and Hepburn together on the screen, it certainly doesn't prepare you for the private relationship that I saw documented time and again in letters. Very different.
What are some of the most obvious ways that their relationship was different in real life than it was in their movies?
Well, I think the thing that surprised me most was how instantaneous the change in Kate took place after she got involved with Tracy. A note of hysteria came into her voice immediately upon that, because she was terrified to be apart from him, and she immediately sensed how troubled he was. I mean, as awful as he is at times, you have to feel sorry for him. He's a deeply troubled person. And I remember, for example, reading a letter that Kate wrote to Philip Barry's wife, the playwright who wrote the Philadelphia Story, at the time that she and Tracy were making the film Without Love. And Kate is saying, Spencer thinks he's going mad. Spencer hasn't slept for weeks. Spencer, what am I going to do? And there's this same sense of incredible desperation. Kate seemed to go through a whole series of changes, particularly in the first decade that she was with Tracy, of trying one thing and then the next to find some way to pull him out of this. First, it was keeping him really busy. Then it was making sure that he didn't drink. And then it was saying, okay, it's all right, I'm not going to stop him from doing it. Then it was getting him to rest. And she just couldn't find a way to save him. And ultimately, she realized that, and all she could do was to stand by and try and support him.
How much was known about Katharine Hepburn's relationship with director John Ford before your biography?
Well, in fact, that relationship has been referred to in every one of the major Ford biographies. It's not a surprise at all. I think what is different about this is that I, for the first time, really tried to understand what that relationship was about. Because one of the questions that people have asked, particularly in the Ford biographies, because they don't know very much about Hepburn, is why was Katharine Hepburn drawn to someone like John Ford? And why was he drawn to her? And I thought that the responsibility of the Hepburn biographer was to see what it was in that relationship. What was so extraordinary to me, and it was an unconsummated relationship. And because of that, there is a kind of passion all the way through, long after. I mean, they fell in love in 1936 when he was directing her in Mary of Scotland, but they remained friends until the end of his life in 1973. Ford wanted the best for Kate and saw the best in her and was a very loyal and very important friend to her. And it was a wonderful kind of example of what male and female friendship can be all about, even when there's a past history of great pain in it.
And they never consummated because he was married.
Because he was. And I think I don't think that's what he wanted from her. I think Tracy never wanted to marry her. I think Ford was deeply in love with her and certainly wanted to marry her. I mean, John Wayne has said that, and his wife has talked about it in her biography of her husband, that Wayne's sense was that Ford would have married her in a minute if he could have brought himself to leave his wife. But again, it's a very tormented man, and his ties to his wife were important to him. And he was, again, somebody who seemed almost at times not to believe that he should be happy. But you certainly, when you're reading the Ford section, I think you feel, oh, I wish this could have happened. I mean, he somehow or other, he did seem in so many ways so right for her. It's an extraordinary thing.
What do you know about Katharine Hepburn's life today?
I haven't seen her since 1993 when I interviewed her. I know her brother actually has read the book and responded to me in an absolutely wonderful, two wonderful letters saying that he thought I'd done a fantastic job. Kate herself, I doubt, will ever read the book. I mean, it's not the sort of thing, she's not introspective. She's not going to go back and look at it. She is still an astonishing example to every woman alive of what can happen if you live life as intensely as you can at every moment. And I came out of working on the book feeling that I respected her more, if possible, than I had before, because I think I saw her pain as well. And it's a pain that she's been at great pains not to let us see. And I think you only love her more when you know how much she suffered.
Barbara Leeming, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me to come.
Barbara Leeming is the author of a new biography of Katharine Hepburn. This is Fresh Air.